So last week I talked about the first few lines, and I wanted to pick up on the next few lines this week, but I also will say a little bit about the shape of the whole thing to start with, I think. So if you remember, this is what Dharmakara says when he meets his teacher for the first time. And what struck me when we were reading it this evening, partly because I've been thinking about devotion and gratitude and sort of what those things mean anyway, but there's a sort of flow in the text that goes from devotion and gratitude to Dharmakara, the monk who's speaking, making his own vow to go out into the world, so that, and then in turn other people will become grateful for the good work that he does in the world. And at the end he makes this vow. He says, "I establish this on you." So his vow is bound up with the inspiration that he gets from his teacher. And you can sort of see that vignette as one example of how spiritual life works or the spiritual practice works. You meet a real teacher, or you have an experience in meditation that moves you in some way. And then you have an experience of gratitude. So it might be that you do like the Naqa meditation and you think, gosh, yes, haven't I received so many different things today? All the people that have helped me, all the people that have produced this meal. And you become very grateful. And out of that gratitude comes a desire to do something back for other people in the world. Traditionally, when you do Naqa, you actually use which is the meditation where we think about what we've received. If you do a Naqon retreat, you might think about what you've received from your mother, and an experience that lots of people have after doing this meditation is of one of gratitude and humility, not always, but often to their mother, after counting their blessings, if you like, and another one of being moved to do something out of that spirit of gratitude. So that's something of the shape of what's happening here. But there's also this sense that the vow is established on the teacher. So there's something about needing to keep returning to the source of that inspiration in order that you can go out into the world and do your good work. And you can see the walking meditation that we do also represents this. You come close to the Buddha and then you go away from the Buddha. And there's a sense of like coming to service each week and filling up on your devotion and reminding yourself of what you have to be grateful for, both in worldly terms and in spiritual terms, that then sort of fills you up so you can go out into the world and be compassionate as much as you're able again. So that's something about the shape of the verse. Gratitude, devotion, leading to an action in the world. Rather, and I suppose you contrast this with some forms of Buddhist training where you are told these are the vows that you're going to take. If as long as you follow these rules, you become enlightened. This Pure Land is much more beginning from a sense of devotion and gratitude, leading to naturally wanting to follow those vows. So the verse I wanted to look at is Tathagata. "Such as your incomparable face, the melody of your enlightenment fills the world," which is very devotional again. So we're still in that part of the text. In Japanese, I've printed off the Japanese if anyone's interested, and forgive my pronunciation. Nyorai Yogen Chosi Murin Shogaku Dayon Koru Jipo Kaimon Shojin Sammai Chi e e toku murio shu sho ke hu. Is that verse in Japanese? So I'm led to believe. Nyorai, I know, is the translation of the Tathagata, but the other characters, I've no idea what they mean. I could have just ordered a wonderful meal in Japanese. And I've got another a more literal translation, which is: "The Tathagata's transcendent appearance has no comparison in all the world. The whole universe vibrates with the great sound of your enlightenment." So two things I wanted to take from this. One is the Sanskrit word Tathagata has two meanings. As we normally pronounce it, as we say, Tathagata. Tata means suchness or thusness or sort of things as they are, reality or transcendent reality, it's sometimes translated as. And Gata means somebody who has gone. So Tathagata means somebody who has gone to transcendent reality or somebody who has gone to the world as it is. But you can also understand it as Tata Agata, which means Agata, instead of meaning somebody who's gone, means somebody who has come. So Tata Agata means somebody who has come from the transcendent world, the sort of spiritual domain of love and wisdom, if you like. And in this word, you can see it mirrors just what I spoke about at the beginning. There's a sense that a Buddha is somebody who has gone to the world of love and wisdom, and also is somebody who comes from the world of love and wisdom into this world to bring some of that light into our lives. So if you wanted one definition of what a Buddha is, you could say that it is that, and also that that is a reflection of the whole verse, in that Dharmakara goes to his teacher for inspiration and then goes into the world. And also for our practice, in that we come here for our inspiration, or we have an experience in meditation, or we have an experience of being loved or accepted by other people in our lives. And that sense of being loved inspires us to go out into the world and pass some of that love on. So a Buddha obviously does that perfectly, and we do it imperfectly. And this is, I suppose, the sense of the next couple of lines. Such is your incomparable face. The melody of your enlightenment fills the world. So you could take this, that the Buddha is so full of love and light that there's nothing worldly that can prevent that light from coming into the world. Sometimes we see it and sometimes we don't see it, but when you're in a state of having the scales removed from your eyes, you can see that the whole world is full of this Buddha-ness. And in fact, if you separate the transcendent realm, or the kind of experience of enlightenment, from the person of the Buddha, then you can say that anything that you encounter in the world, whether it's a person or something in nature, has this quality of enlightenment about it that has the potential to enlighten you. So it might be that you come here and get your inspiration from reciting the Buddha's name and doing devotional practice, but it might be that you see a beautiful flower and get your inspiration from that, or somebody says a nice word from you and you get your inspiration from that, or even that somebody says a harsh word from you and you're able to see the suffering behind that, and that inspires some form of love or devotion. So we have the sense of the whole world being full of this potential to wake us up, to fill us up with this spirit, so that we can then go into the world, take some of this spirit into the world. So Tathagata, such is your incomparable face, the melody of your enlightenment fills the world. And then it goes on to say something about the qualities of enlightenment, how they are embodied in the person of the Buddha. And we'll think about those next week. And then we go.